Chapter 7. The Very Ancient One and the Legend of Hol Dat. The course of our lives is played out in space. We speak of an order of time and space, a space in which everything is subjected to a phenomenon we call time. Hereby we express that everything which is has a beginning and an end, shows an ascent and a descent, in brief, is dialectical. The ascent we call birth, the descent death. At the point where death has become complete and the microcosm is totally emptied, birth sets in again. Everything that is to come has already been. Everything that is doomed to depart. This dialectical order, hence an order of time and space in which death is an irrefutable companion of all and everything, contains very great secrets. It is necessary to unveil some of these mysteries in order to vivify our insight into the necessity of transfiguration. If we succeed in this, we shall be able to understand many incomprehensible processes which occur in our lives, to understand their purposes, and so to decide either to cooperate fully in such processes or to withdraw from them entirely. When we speak and think about the processes of life and death, we in fact limit ourselves almost exclusively to the various forms of life we know and with which we come into contact directly. We know that the Rosy Cross teaches that everything we refer to as our personality is subject to death. That is to say, all the vehicles of our personality and the consciousness dwelling therein, the consciousness we call our I, cannot maintain themselves in the order of time and space with both its spheres. They are totally eliminated, dissolved. What is left is the emptied microcosm, which after being emptied, provides itself with a new inhabitant, this being made possible by the earthly maintaining process. But did you know that another process of death also occurs in every microcosm? We, nature-born beings of the order of time and space, are in the process of dying while living. This process of dying usually occurs within a period of at the most 100 years. All this is known to us. But in this order of time and space, there is still another process of dying which can take millions of years, namely, that of one who is imprisoned with us in the same microcosm. After we have closed our eyes forever in this material sphere, glimmering on for a short while in the reflection sphere, the other one in our microcosm will perhaps be in the process of dying for an interminable time. Until now, we have called the other one the rose, and we know that this rose is a point of contact of the Gnostic radiation, a contact between two worlds. But a great mystery lies hidden behind the symbol of the rose, a dungeon, a sepulchral temple in our microcosm in which the very ancient one lies enchained, the ever-dying one who bears the afflictions and experiences of all the mortal companions who were very near to him in the order of time and space. However, in this order, great forces are at work to bring about the quickest possible death of the very ancient one who is hidden behind the door of the golden rose, for then only the eternal scar of memory would be left in the microcosm, and the order of time and space would no longer be endangered. Great forces are also at work to supply the bread of life to the very ancient one in his dungeon, to keep him alive and so prolong his miserable existence in the hope of releasing him before he dies, and then to rescue him from all dangers. To sum up, in every microcosm, two N21Es are to be found, the self and the other, the very ancient one. The self, totally subjected to the nature of dialectics, beginning in time and ending in time, and the other one, imprisoned in, though not of this nature. The other one originates from a very different state of life, but has sunk down into ours due to a prehistoric incident. He does not truly live, but is as if frozen in the order of time and space, unconscious, immersed in a trance of death. Almost imperceptibly, slowly, his life is squeezed to death in the cold of the world. If that process of death were to be fulfilled, it would be far more terrible than ours. when an entity predestined to be eternal is submerged in a field of death, a situation similar to that of suicide develops for that entity, a situation from which there is no escape and which is designated in the holy language as the outer darkness. An extremely confused and complicated situation therefore exists in our immediate microcosmic life field. Two lives, both mortal, are lived in it, one of which is like a slow-motion film. It is possible to explain fully how this dramatic and peculiar situation came about, and indeed one can see evidence of it in everyday life. For this reason, we ought to think of one of the inscriptions to be found in the sepulchral temple of Brother Christian Rosycross. There is no empty space. The universal doctrine says that the original substance, both in this world and in the one above it, is sevenfold, and that every situation and principle is divided by degrees into seven gradations of density and of nature. And so it goes on until there is a, for us, unknown number of spaces within the original seven, which in turn are to be considered as a unity. This unity, seen as a whole, reveals the entire universe. Everything is contained within it. The divine breath flows within this unity of substance. However, mankind identifies its experience of space and order, its dialectical life reality, with the one absolute divine purpose. We know that the substance from which our mankind lives is totally different from the other substances. That is why the inhabitants of the earth, who only experience their own material manifestation or substance, and who therefore look through the other substances with unseeing eyes, think that the universe is just an empty space. Yet there is not a millimeter, not an atom of empty space. An entity of another space in the All Revelation, transferred into our order of time and space, would not be able to express himself in our order and would not be able to live in it. If such an entity in his space was living an eternal life, then he, being imprisoned in ours, would come to know death as a life sensation, yet, as an eternal being, he would not experience death in our sense. His end would therefore be like the outer darkness. It appears from all the accounts given by the universal doctrine and the holy language that a very large, unknown number of entities from a higher, more absolute field of manifestation did indeed sink down into our own, and afterwards were unable to express themselves because of the totally different nature of the dialectical field of manifestation. Thus they were irretrievably lost once they were children of the light. Now they became children of the darkness. All this can be explained perfectly from a natural scientific point of view. Natural potentials always have limits. We, as lung-breathing beings, cannot breathe in water or live in a vacuum. If our state of nature is fundamentally violated, we cannot maintain ourselves. It is the same in the multitude of spaces in the All Revelation. It is utterly impossible to transfer a creature from its own natural space into another space which is not in agreement with its nature. One revelation is not compatible with another. Now it may be known to you from the philosophy of the Rosycross that the dialectical space in the All Revelation was never intended to be a life space for human entities. The dialectical space had, and in fact has, a totally different purpose. However, when in the ancient past many entities were submerged in this dialectical space, this chaos of contrasts and without help would have been irretrievably lost, it pleased the Logos to bring to development a revelation of salvation for them. A revelation of salvation of healing is of course always temporary, subject to time, it is not meant to last. Therefore, all our microcosms are subject to this revelation of salvation. This accounts for our presence in our microcosms, the presence of the time-space entity. We, living so vitally in this nature order, are being called to pass through the Rose Gate and vitalize the imprisoned, submerged, frozen pre-man, the very ancient one, to drive him, as forerunners, across the borders of this nature space, in this way, enabling the submerged one in our microcosm to return to his fatherland. The revelation of salvation for the very Ancient One is at the same time a message of salvation for us. To us, beings of time, subject to nature, born for and dedicated to death, is promised eternity in the fatherland of the very Ancient Ones if we dedicate ourselves to the task for which we were created. Totally absorbed in our companion, being one with him, we shall leave the spaces of time and enter the spaces of eternal life. When we, as true servants, are willing to fulfill our tasks in the microcosmic house of service, then the great miracle will occur, the temporary will be swallowed up by the eternal. By non-being according to nature, by non-action according to the eye of nature, we are all elected, through the Rose Gate, to be the children of God. In order to be able to go this highly joyful way, we only have to break through all the delusions inherent in time and space. At the point of separation, at the borders of time, we have to take leave of the forces of time and space. These forces, driven by their nature, try to maintain us in the nature of their earth. Upon all this is founded the exceedingly beautiful legend of Hoel Dat, the legend used by Gustav Meyrink to create his fantastic novel, The Angel of the Western Window. It is a story in which no single aspect of the way we all have to go has been omitted. If we analyze the legend of Hoel Dat, we shall obtain the following result. The story is about a sword. The sword, the cross, is the symbol of man. The old mysteries speak of an invincible sword, beautifully forged, set with magnificent precious stones. It is the eternal man living in the non-dialectical spaces of the all. This man is called Hoel Dat. Dat, in later centuries indicated as D, means the good one. Hoel indicates the original being in the eternal state of God. The man in this state of being, the sword set with precious stones, lives in a paradise, in a garden amongst a brotherhood whose members are called gardeners. One of these royal beings perishes in the space of time, hence one of the descendants of Hoel Dat loses his royal sword, his royal nature. It is captured by Ivan the Terrible, and there is no hope left for it. Then it comes into the possession of Queen Elizabeth of England, and a gleam of hope sparkles for it again. As all memory of the sword is totally lost, many look upon it as a dagger, a penknife, a paper knife, as useful for dialectical nature. Its noble form is tampered with. Finally, one of the descendants of the revelation of salvation goes the path of salvation, cleansing the sword of its curse and of the blood of the lower nature and bringing it back to his ancestors, to the court of the gardeners. The hero who undertakes this is John Dee, John the Good, the forerunner of Jesus, the brother who breaks into the sepulchral temple to release the other one. He is the good servant who has been called and who dedicates himself to the blood golden rose. Gustav Meyrink has succeeded in interpreting sublimely the ups and downs of the path of liberation. May his book, therefore, be a powerful help to you all upon your path. May it deepen your insight on your way to the Garden of Gardens, the court of the gardeners.